Welcome to Mind Your Freedom. I'm your host, Adele Anderson, successful businesswoman, now NLP trainer and life freedoms coach. Each week, we're going to explore the power of and give insight into how to achieve your greatest personal freedoms. You're someone who's seeking more, knowing that there is more to life's journey. I find you open, curious, and always looking to expand your awareness. And you're ready to surrender the pain and grow into the person that you know that you are. And it can be gritty, because real life is just like that. We either have an opportunity to grow when life falls apart, even at the times when it threatens our very existence, makes us question life, even who we are. If you need that one-on-one support, go to lifecoachadele.com, check in with me there, or simply stay tuned. Each weekly episode offers those real-life stories, filled with the pain, the vulnerable truths, the laughs, aha moments, and the takeaway gems. Get ready to access freedom experts from all over the world. So thank you for joining me today. Now let's get started. Welcome, Freedom Seekers. It's Adele Anderson from Life Coach Adele, and this is Mind Your Freedom. And today, I have a very special guest with me, Steve Snyder. A little bit about Steve is he's a graduate of UCLA, and he lives in Seal Beach, California, but spends a lot of time in Sedona. He has retired after 36 years at the Vision Service Plan. We'll talk a little bit about that. But more importantly, I'd love to talk about his father's experience, his family's experience, of his father being shot down in World War II. His father's name is Howard Snyder. He was a crew member on a B-17 along with a co-crew member, I guess, Susan Smith. But I'm going to let Steve tell you all about this remarkable, remarkable life event. Welcome, Steve.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's really nice for me to meet you. When I saw your bio come up, I just reached out immediately. And I was just so interested because I am a survivor of a plane crash. And your story is probably pretty poignant, not only because it was during war times, but, you know, there was survivors. So can you tell us a little bit about Shot Down, the book that you created and are now offering, number one bestseller?
Certainly. Well, it takes place during World War II, as you mentioned. It's about goes into detail about what happened to each member of a B-17 10-man bomber crew after they were shot down over Belgium in 1944. My father was the pilot, and his plane was named the Susan Ruth after my oldest sister, who was 1 year old at the time that he went overseas. And the book goes into detail about what happened to each member of the crew. The book's just not about my dad, it's about each member of the crew, because something different happened to each man. Five of the crew made it back home, but five of them did not. And it's also about all the courageous Belgian people that risked their lives trying to help them after they were shot.
Wow, you gave me shivers.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Growing up, I knew the basics of my dad's World War II history, and he was a B-17 pilot. He was stationed in England with the 8th Air Force, bombing missions over Europe, and then was shot down in 1944, and he was missing in action for 7 months, but he evaded capture and eventually made it back home.
And did the other crew members also evade capture?
No, the plane was attacked by two German Focke-Wulf fighters. Okay. And in the ensuing air battle, two of the crew were killed in the plane during the attack. The other eight were able to bail out. And then there was one other man, the tail gunner, who was able to evade capture. He wasn't with my father at all. Three of the men were picked up immediately by the Germans and became prisoners of war. Two of them were injured so severely that they were repatriated back to the U.S. before the war ended. The other man, he stayed as a POW for the remainder of the war. And then three of the other crew members that bailed out, they evaded capture for a couple months. But then they were captured by the Nazis, interrogated and shot.
Oh. Wow.
So it's a compelling story. It has a lot of tragedy in it, but it has a lot of triumph in it as well.
Yes. So they bailed from the plane, probably parachuting, I'm thinking. Is that what happened? And then,
yes.
According to where they landed, different things happened to different parts of the crew.
Exactly. My dad and the plane, they both came down in Belgium. My dad being the pilot of the plane, and he was the commander, the crew in the plane, and the last one to bail out.
Right.
All the other guys who were able to bail out, they actually came down in France. It was right at the French-Belgian border.
And so was there different levels of safety then? In France, the German were occupying that area, and then in Belgium, there was a little bit more time for where your dad landed.
Well, all the guys who landed in Belgium were picked up by the resistance. Landed in France, were picked up and taken back across the border into Belgium. So really then, even though they landed in France, they were quickly taken back into Belgium. So everything that really occurred except involving my dad occurred in Belgium. After my dad bailed out, he came down into some trees. His parachute got hung up in the trees and he couldn't get down. He was dangling 20 feet off the ground. Fortunately for him, a couple of young Belgium men, Raymond Durvan and Henri Franken, came to his rescue before the Germans got there. This occurred in the early afternoon.
Wow.
And they told him to stay put and hide in the woods until nighttime because they thought it was too dangerous to try to move him during daylight. That night they came back and got him and took him to the Durvan farmhouse. And he only stayed there one night because they thought it was too dangerous for him to stay there any longer with German patrols combing the area looking for him. And so he was picked up by a Belgian customs officer who came in a tandem bicycle and took him to another location. And after that, he was moved from place to place to place. How long he stayed at any given location depended on how brave the people were who lived there. And how dangerous the Belgium underground thought it was for him to stay there. He might stay one night at a house, he might spend 6 weeks.
What did he describe his experience of as being moved around? What was the, you know, there obviously a high level of danger for not only the people in the underground, but for your dad. So did he ever sort of allow you to drop into how he was handling it emotionally? I mean, he's a commander, he's trained to do this, but he's also a young man, he's a young father. So it'd be just an amazing, life experience, but how do we handle those types of things? Did he ever?
Well, yeah, it was pretty incredible. And the people that hid my dad or any down airman for that matter, they were extremely brave and courageous people, because if the German secret police, the Gestapo, found out that they were aiding down airmen, they'd be arrested, tortured, either shot or sent to concentration camps. And some of the Belgian people that helped my dad and other members of his crew didn't meet that fate. They really saved my dad's life. He said they would let him sleep in their bed, they'd sleep on the floor. Everything was rationed because Belgium was occupied by the Nazis at that time. Food was scarce, but they'd give him, the larger portion of the food that they had. Just wonderful people. But as you alluded to, it was very stressful for my dad. First of all, his plane's attacked. It's on fire. He has to bail out. He comes down in a foreign country, has no idea where he is, doesn't know what happened to his buddies on the crew. Can't communicate with the U.S. military. And then here he's being helped by complete strangers. And at the beginning, he couldn't speak French. They couldn't speak English. So, communicating was a big issue. A little French-English dictionary in his escape kit that he could point to. But it was very stressful, and any of those people that were helping him could be collaborators with the Germans and turn him over to the Gestapo. And he had some real close calls of almost being discovered by the Germans that are described in the book. Finally, he got tired of hiding. I think one of it was the stress of, you know, just being on pins and needles at all the time that you could be arrested. And word came that the Allies had landed at Normandy on June 6th. He was shot down on February 8th. Of 44. The word came that the Allies had landed at Normandy on June 6th, and he wanted to get back in the fight. Unlike most airmen, my dad actually was in the infantry in the army for a year before he went into the Air Force. So he had a year's training in the infantry, and he knew how to fight on the ground. So he decided to join the French resistance, which his Belgium helpers tried to vehemently to talk him out of, because he was dangerous, is you could have died in the fighting against the Germans, or if he was captured by the Germans, he would have been shot on the spot as a terrorist. But he felt it was his duty to get back in the fight, and so he joined the French resistance. They took him across the border from Belgium into France, and he hooked up with a group of the French resistance. They were called the Mackie, and the Mackie, they were independent ragtag guerrilla groups located all across France. They harassed the Germans by disrupting communications, sabotaging railroad lines, attacking convoys, assassinating German officers. They got their instruction from the British through coded messages over the BBC. They were supplied by the British through airdrops. So he fought with the Mackie for a couple of months until the US troops came up through France after D-Day and liberated that area. And he met up with them, and that's how he got back to England.
Amazing, incredible life story. Wow.
Because he could have just stayed hunkered down. The safest thing to do would just to stay hidden and wait for the U.S. troops to come up through France. But I don't know how many people could have done what he'd done. I don't know whether I could have done it. I'd have the courage and the bravery to get back in the fight and go from the relative safety of hiding into actual, you know, fighting and combat against them.
Yeah, that is a real testament to the times, isn't it? That
and they were amazing people. They're called the greatest generation. I certainly think that's true. Mm,
there you go. So now your dad arrives back home after how many months?
7 months he was missing in action.
So your family, your mom didn't know if he was dead or alive?
No, as I mentioned, he was shot down on February 8th. On February 23rd, my mother received a telegram from the War Department saying that his plane was shot down and he was missing in action. And actually, my other sister, Nancy, was born while my dad was missing in action. Here's my mother back home with a one-year-old baby, Susan Ruth, and then a little infant girl, Nancy, not knowing if she'd ever see her husband again. So it was very trying times, not only on my mother, but all the other wives or parents or sweethearts of other members of the crew. Mm-hmm. So that was a hard time. And there's lots of excerpts from letters that they exchanged why the crew was missing in action that are in the book that are very moving.
Okay, so crew that did make it out sooner than your dad were in touch with your mom? Is that what I understand?
Well, the three men that became prisoners of war, they were able to write letters back home so that they knew that those three were safe.
Okay.
And then they informed the relatives that the two men who died in the plane, that accounted for five. Two died, three were prisoners of war. But the other five, no one knew anything about what happened to him. And my dad was totally separated. He didn't find out what happened to any members of the crew, even about the two men that were killed in the plane, until he got back to England. So they were, word came back to the relatives about the crew, you know, at different times.
Right. So the four other men, other than your dad, so five were missing in action. Did the other four crew members survive as well?
Well, the five that survived, three of those were the prisoners, the prisoners of war. And then my dad and another crew member, Bill Schlenker, the tail gunner, he was also missing in action for 7 months. Unlike my father, he was hidden one house the entire time. He was hidden by a woman, Josephine Collet, and her two daughters, Paula and Giselle, in Chimay, Belgium. Unlike my dad, that was moved from place to place and then ended up joining the French Resistance, Bill Schlenker, who was just a young guy, he was 19 years old when he was shot down, celebrated his 20th birthday, was missing in action.
Wow.
He was hidden, stayed at the same place, and actually he came back a little after my dad.
Just a teenager. Think of that, right? If we think of our 19-year-olds today, and this experience of this very young man being hidden and been in war and obviously trained before that, just remarkable the life skills that would have been required for them to maintain, you know, some level of just being normal in a very unnormal circumstance.
You have to remember, though, that times were a lot different back then. Typically, the gunners on a plane, of the 10-man crew, there were four officers and then six enlisted men who were mainly gunners. And the gunners were typically 18, 19 years old. And then the officers were in their early 20s.
Wow.
And they were, unlike today, they were citizen soldiers. You know, they weren't in the Army or the Air Force, they were just civilians. And the war broke out, and they volunteered or were drafted. They went through a quick training period. And then all of a sudden, they were in the war. And back then, the United States was a much different country. Most people lived out in the country, in rural areas, unlike today, where most people live in the city. You know, there's no TV back then. There was no, you know, internet. There was no social media. They only had a radio or maybe reading magazines or newspapers to know a little bit about the other, about the world, the rest of the world. A lot of these guys, you know, lived on farms and never even been out of their home county before. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they're away from their parents for the first time, away from their mother for the first time. They're halfway around the world, fighting in a war, and they had no training on what to do after they were shot down. They had a little escape kit with some money in it and a few items, but unlike today where there's training about escape and evasion, back there was no training. What those guys went through was absolutely incredible. But and what's amazing about that those men that lived through it and came back home is that they didn't consider themselves heroes whatsoever. They just said, well, we had a job to do. The country needed us. So we went and did our job and we came back home and got on with their lives. Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. And so your mom is back home. She's got seven months of really not knowing if her husband is alive. Has she relayed that journey to you?
No, she really didn't talk about that much. She did have a great support group with my dad's parents and then her parents. And then she had four siblings. So she had a lot of support back home. Actually, she bought a house in Pasadena, California. My dad was... before he got shot down, he was in England. Her parents gave her some money to put down a down payment on a little house in Pasadena. And, he was a school teacher for a little while, not that long, because back then, if you became pregnant, you couldn't teach anymore. You know, that you were just dismissed from the school because there was a different world back then.
It was.
So it was very tough on her, and then she didn't know anything what happened until my dad got back to England. And then he sent her a Western Telegram Western Union telegram saying he was fit as a fiddle and to bank the money, honey, because he had all that back pay from his being missing in action for 7 months.
Yeah. And then the reunion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I can't imagine what a glorious day that was when my mother got that telegram and then shared it with my, you know, her parents and my dad's parents, and they knew that he was safe.
Yeah.
And at that time, the Air Force had a rule that if you were shot down over occupied territory and helped by the underground, that you could not go back into combat because they were worried if you were shot down a second time, captured by the Germans and tortured, that you give up the identity of the people that helped you the first time.
Right.
He was sent back to the U.S. and became a B-17 a flight instructor. And my mother and the kids were able to join him first in Florida and in Ohio. And then when the war ended, they moved to Pasadena.
Right. And then you are the third child in the family?
Yeah. I was born in 47 for a couple of years after the war, unexpectedly. My mother said it was the best mistake they ever made.
I can see that. Well, it's an amazing historical, you know, family story that you obviously lived through as a child. Was your dad willing to talk about it when he got home, or was this something that you've done later in life?
Well, like most World War II veterans, my dad didn't talk much about the war until 1989. In 1989, a memorial was erected in the little village of Mackenwas, Belgium, where he and the plane came down. And my dad and the three other members of the crew that were still living at the time went over for the dedication of the memorial with their wives. And there my dad was reunited with all these people that hit him during the war and revisited these places where he was hidden. And that brought it all back. He started talking about it then. And then 5 years later, 1994, my wife and I accompanied my parents to Belgium for the 50th anniversary of the liberation of Belgium and my dad's plane being shot down. And that's when it became personal for me, because I got to see these houses and farms where my dad was hidden and met a couple of his helpers that hit him. And that's when it became personal for me, because I saw everything firsthand.
And how was that for you, that experience?
It was incredible. And my dad was treated not only like a hero, but they couldn't have treated my dad or the President of the United States any better than my dad. I'll never forget one time that they were having a big party and we arrived a little late. They set up these huge, I've been to Belgium 6 times for these celebrations. They're wonderful events, but they set up this huge tent where they have dinners and lunches, and band concerts and dances. And my dad was the guest of honor, but we arrived a little late. My dad walked in this tent. There's hundreds of people in this tent. Everyone stood up and started applauding my dad. And I get chills just talking about it today. They really, because the Belgian people, even today, are so thankful and so grateful the Americans and the Allies coming to their rescue to liberate them from Nazi oppression and Nazi occupation. And they do a great job of educating the younger generation to remember as well. They went through 4 years of hell with Nazi occupation and people getting killed and sent to labor camps, sent to concentration camps. So they really value their freedom. So amazing experiences. I just love going over there. I've made some lifelong friends. In fact, I probably wouldn't have written the book if it wasn't for two Belgian gentlemen, Dr. Paul Delahaye and Jacques Lalot, who were young boys during the war, and they were greatly affected by it because they saw firsthand the atrocities committed by the Nazis. And later on in life, they became local historians. And they interviewed all these Belgian people, members of the Belgium underground, about events that took place involving my dad and his crew, and they documented their testimony. They gave me unbelievably detailed information about events that would have been lost forever without their dedicated research. So I owe them a great deal. Dr. Delahaye, he died in 2013, but Jacques Lowe is in the 80s now, and he's a dear, dear friend.
Lifelong connection.
I wouldn't have written the book without him.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing that you were able to compile all of this information, so personal to you, but I see, you know, in the bio of the book, personal letters, oral and written accounts, declassified military documents and interviews from people that were there, experienced it, lived through it. They, you know, had these incredible, incredible once in a lifetime, thank goodness, events that happened to them. And like you said, that ongoing gratitude of, you know, communities, world communities coming together for a common cause, and how that human connection has lasted decades.
There was no other event in history that affected more people than World War II. 60 million people died, millions more were wounded, millions more were displaced and left homeless. It changed the course of the U.S. and the world forever. Really, anyone who lives through that, whether you were in the military or a civilian in Europe, where all the carnage took place, or in the Pacific, I mean, that was the defining moment of those people's lives. There was nothing that you can compare to it. So it did have a huge effect.
Totally. And on your family, you know, your dad was willing to step up, you know, this flight being shot down, the coming together of the Belgium underground, the French resistance, saving many, many American, Canadian lives. And now you've got it in this book. It's called Shot Down. It's the number one bestseller on Amazon. It has received 25 national book awards, and I'm getting it. You have just, you know, told your story with such heart and such passion. My, you know, shivers running up and down my spine, and I can't wait to know more about the history, you know, as someone who's never gratefully and thankfully never lived through a war. But it is something that we should all be aware of, our history, so that it can never be repeated again.
Absolutely. Yeah, the book is kind of two books in one, actually. One's the story of my dad and his crew that reads like a novel. And then it's all based on firsthand testimony, as you mentioned. And then what I added to the book was just a great deal of historical information and the anecdotes about and surrounding the war, to put it in context and give it background. So it's kind of a history book about the air war over Europe and World War II, as well as the story of my dad and his crew. And in addition to all those excerpts from letters from my dad, other members of the crew were relatives, there's over 200 time period photographs in the book, so you can visualize everything that you're reading about, which makes it very nice.
It sounds.
Then the other thing that was amazing is that I found the German Luftwaffe pilot that shot down my dad's plane and interviewed him for the book.
Amazing.
That was quite an experience.
Yes, because, you know, they were patriots too. They were doing what they thought was the right thing. So how was that, and what is his perspective today?
Well, actually, his name is Hans Berger, and he's the only person from the shot down story who's still living. Hans is 96 years old. He lives in Munich, Germany. And fortunately for me, he became a translator after the war, so he speaks perfect English. And I've been to Munich twice to meet him in person in 2016, and then last year, 2019, and we've become good friends. And like, as you mentioned, you know, he was 20 years old, you know, like the U.S. Airman, you know, he was fighting for his country, trying to do a job and trying to stay alive. And actually, the gunners on my dad's plane shot Hans Berger down at the same time he shot my dad's plane down. So they shot each other down. He bailed out, you know, and then Belgium was occupied by the Germans, so they picked him up and then came back to his base, and he made it through the war. And he said it was unfortunate they had to be shooting at each other, but you know, that was war. That's what they were there to do. A lot of people ask me, well, don't you hate this guy that shot down your dad's plane? And I have no ill feelings toward Hans actually at all. Maybe if my dad died, I'd feel differently. But at one point in time, Hans' life and my father's life crossed paths, and their lives intersected. And as I mentioned, that was the World War II was the defining moment of my dad's life. So actually, Hans is part of my dad's life, part of his story. So I felt a personal relationship with Hans, and it's been a great experience getting to know him.
Now, is that crossover in the book? Because I'm thinking like, okay, everyone's going to want to know, how did their lives cross paths? Did they actually know who each other was when this happened?
No. All my dad knew and all the military records showed were that two German fighters attacked my dad's plane, Focke-Wulf 190s, and shot him down. And that's all I've ever known. But one day, when I was doing my research, my wife, Glenda, said, well, why don't you try to find the German pilot that shot down your dad's plane, which I thought was ridiculous. It'd be impossible. She doesn't know what she's talking about. She's naive, But like a good husband, I did what she told me to do. And I went on the internet and posted an inquiry, trying to find Luftwaffe pilot. A couple forums came up, which I joined and posted inquiries. Because I knew the day my dad was shot down, the place where he was shot down, the time of day. And in a week, two guys got back to me, one from England and one from Belgium. On that day, there were 12 B-17 shot down, and the one shot down south of Chimay, Belgium, was shot down by Hans Berger. And the guy in Belgium that contacted me, he was actually a Luftwaffe historian and had written a number of books in which he mentioned Hans. And so as Hans, it was okay for me to contact him. I got his email address. That's how we connected, and Hans was, pretty surprised when I contacted him. I started bombarding him with all these questions. At one point, Hans goes, well, Steve, we really don't know each other very well, and you're asking me all these personal questions. But I build up his trust, and he gave me some wonderful information that's in the book about what it was like up against the 8th Air Force. Fortunately, my dad and Hans never met. My dad died in 2007. He wasn't the last crew member to die, but he was the oldest at 91. My dad was older when he went in. And I didn't decide to write the book until 2000. So unfortunately, they never met. I would have loved to sit in a room and just listen to those two talk.
Amazing. Yes, these two young men on opposite sides and, very similar in that they're both pilots, and we can't maybe even drop into that experience fully, but it looks like you have covered, you will give us a bird's eye view of actually being in the air and what happened and then what was on the ground and the people. And it seems like just an incredible look into World War II, and thank you for all the work that you've done to just bring light to not only your father's story, but the incredible people that were brave in so many ways. People that weren't trained, weren't in the army. These are just farmers and everyday people.
Right.
Yeah, incredible. Well, I'm going to leave it there, and because there's just so much in the book, and I want people to buy the book. So I'm going to ask you one little question. If I were to say to you three little words, mind your freedom, what does that mean to you?
Oh, gosh. As I mentioned about the Belgian people and how thankful they are and how they remember what they went through, because they lived through a period of time when all their freedoms were taken away. So they really value those freedoms that they have. The United States have never been occupied. We've never had wars on our soil. And people in the U.S., especially the younger generations, just really don't have the the knowledge or the appreciation and value the freedoms that they enjoy today, and that people had to fight and die and sacrifice for the freedoms that we just take for granted today. And really, that's why I do what I do. Since writing the book, it's basically changed my life. I go, except for this year with the coronavirus, I typically travel all over the United States, attending air shows, signing copies of my book. I do a lot of public speaking, making presentations, and my mission is to remember, honor, and educate, to remember the air war over Europe and World War II, to honor the men who fought it, and to educate the public about it. Because World War II ended in 75 years ago, and it's fading in people's memory, and we just can't let that happen. As you know, you hear this often, you know, and it's said a lot, you know, if you don't remember history and learn from history, you're going to repeat it. And that's said for a reason, and I firmly believe it's true. So, you know, future generations, younger generations, need to know that history. And, you know, what created and formed this country and gave them the freedoms and the lives that we enjoy today.
I agree. So if they want to buy your book, which I'm sure lots of listeners are going to buy your book, it's called Shot Down by Steve Snyder. And it is obviously available on Amazon, but we can put a link in the show notes. And if someone's looking for speaking engagement, that they're looking for a historian, Steve can tell you his story. So this might be another opportunity to reach out to Steve. And if people wanted to do that, how do they get a hold of you?
Okay. As you mentioned, you know, most books are bought on Amazon. So it is Shot Down, the true story of pilot Howard Snyder and the crew of the B-17, Susan Ruth. If someone wants autographed copy, a personally signed book, they can go to my website, which is Steve Snyder, S-N-Y-D-E-R, stevesnyderauthor.com. And there they can order a signed book. And also, there's just not information on my website about the book, but there's a tremendous amount of information on the website about World War II, the air war over Europe. There's interviews, there's links to archival footage, so it's a great research resource, people. The book's also available to Barnes & Noble, or really any bookstore can order it. If they don't have it in stock, they can order it.
Right, but just having that resource to go to your website and learn more is invaluable. So that, yeah. I think that would be the best place for people to go, is to go directly to you and see how you put this all together, and then they can get the book right from your website, stevesnyderauthor.com.
And it's available as a print book, both hardcover, paperback, ebook in all formats, and also it's available as an audio book, although there's no pictures in the audio book.
Right. Well, amazing. Thank you for sharing your and your dad's, your family's, this, you know, a lot about the history, the people that are in there. It's a remarkable testament to people from, you know, overseas and here that were living it and, you know, having to come up with these amazing life skills, resilience, overcoming horrific forces. So I look forward to reading the book. And I thank you so much for being on Mind Your Freedom. And I hope
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. And it was enjoyable.
Wonderful. Thank you for taking the time to tune in today. Now, if you're ready to move beyond where you are today, you're seeking deeper clarity, understanding, or need help moving past the pain, imagine, just for a moment, feeling that freedom, and it is possible. Connect with me, lifecoachadele.com. I would love to support you. You can do that today, or join our Freedom Facebook community. And then, remember to head over to iTunes and subscribe. a grateful thank you if you could take the time to do a review so we can grow our higher learning community together. Stay well. Bye now.